and welcome back to AG Podcasts, a series where we explore and understand how research works in the environment and ecology and how its implementation can pull us out of climate doom. The AG Podcast is your one-stop shop of curated content on conservation, sustainability, and the environment. This is your host, Namrata Murli. Today, we're in conversation with Dr. Ravi Chellam. He is the CEO of MetaString Foundation and Director of the Mission Secretariat of the Preparatory Phase Project of the National Mission on Biodiversity and Human Well-being. He is a member of the Biodiversity Collaborative and has served as the head of many environmental organizations in the past, such as Greenpeace India, WCS India, and even ATRI. A passionate cricketer in his college years, his current interests include conservation of large carnivores, conservation and management of wildlife and biodiversity outside protected areas, human-wildlife conflicts, and ecological restoration. So welcome, Ravi, to the AG Podcast, and I'm so excited to begin this episode today. So to get right into it, Ravi, in the current state of affairs in India, how is the National Biodiversity Mission addressing the issues and attempting to solve them?
See, the title itself is a good way to communicate why it is relevant and what it is trying to do. It's the National Mission on Biodiversity and Human Well-being. We're talking of coupled systems here. Not as nature and environment in one silo and human beings and so-called civilization in another silo. It is a recognition of the fact that human beings, their lives, their development, their sustained well-being is laid on the foundations of functional ecosystems, conservation of landscapes, waterscapes, mountainscapes, desertscapes, all of which have a role not just in our lives, but in keeping this planet healthy and functional. Pandemic is one example. The COVID-19 pandemic is one example of what's gone wrong. But you see air quality, water shortages, flash flooding, climate change, all of which are linked. We tend to look at these things as silos, but they're all linked. And that's very important to keep in mind. And hence, the mission is very, very relevant, not just for India. I think it's a trendsetter for the world.
So there are so many organizations all across India working with the government or even otherwise on various environmental issues. Why is it important that the mission also does this?
The mission is something of scale. This, as I said, has not been done anywhere in the world on this scale. It's not even been imagined at this scale. It's a function of bringing the best biodiversity science to the table, but not as an academic esoteric exercise, but as a way of informing and pushing actions on the ground in the right direction. It's bringing together biological and ecological environmental sciences, but equally, if not more importantly, social sciences, communication, media, social media, bringing all that it takes to make a difference on the ground. If not anything else, at the end of 10 years of this mission, if Indian citizens begin to change their attitude towards wildlife, begin to appreciate the wealth that Indian biodiversity and nature is really signifying, I think it would be a great success. We often view as forest and other natural ecosystems as an impediment to development, but I think that attitude needs to change, that we really need to not just appreciate, but equally conserve and build on what nature has had to offer so abundantly to India. And going back to your question as to why so many different organizations and all that, this is to provide resources, network, knowledge systems, mentoring opportunities, capacity building on an equal level. It's a national mission. It hopes to operate in every political jurisdiction of India. It hopes to then, based on that experience, provide knowledge and experience to not just the South Asian region, but the world. So it's that scaling that is important, not isolated functioning. There is enormous, as you say, thousands of wonderful initiatives, but coming together and being able to think across disciplines. It's not just biodiversity, it's not just health, it's not just agriculture, bringing all of it together.
So why would you say it's important that we act now? Are we late to react already? Are we reacting well in time? Do we have time to fix this? How would you say this is working?
I would slightly rephrase the question. I think time is always, I mean, obviously things could have been done a few decades before, but from a knowledge recognition perspective, from a capacity perspective to envision something like this, were we ready? Maybe, maybe not. It just happens that the pandemic has come a few months after this mission's detailed project report had actually been written. We submitted the kind of first full version of this document in December of 2019. And that was when we were beginning to hear about the pandemic. So the mission is not a response to the pandemic. I think it's a response to the global environmental crisis. And India has been, unfortunately, feeling the effects, be it flash flooding, drought, insect pestilence, landslides, and so on and so forth, loss of biodiversity, all of which impeding our livelihoods, impeding our well-being, of the Delhi air pollution. There are just so many examples. So in terms of timing, just that the stars aligned, people got together, people in the government were open to this kind of thing. The Prime Minister's Science, Technology, Innovation Advisory Council had just been formed. They were encouraging interventions on this scale. So part of it is external in terms of what's happening. But more importantly, I think it was just the ability of some people to come together, think big, feed off each other's enthusiasm and knowledge and experience, which has made it happen.
Yeah, I think we cannot underestimate how important it is that so many experts from all across our country and so many different fields of expertise have come together for this. But even amongst the experts, not everyone gives the same importance to human well-being when we're talking about biodiversity. So why is it important and what is the interrelation between biodiversity and human well-being?
At one level, that's a no-brainer. Clean air, clean water. We've fed off nature. We've had a free lunch, dinner, breakfast, snacks, whatever you want to call it, for centuries, right? And that's a basic right. I mean, if as human beings, we don't have access to clean air, clean water, what less can we aspire for? I mean, if those fundamental basis for life is not available, you could live in a mansion, you could have air conditioners, you could have chauffeur-driven vehicles, you could have the swimming pools, parking lots, God knows, I mean, live in 20-storied buildings. But if you don't have clean air, clean water, what is it that you're trying to achieve in life? So it's also how we imagine nature, or what is nature. I think every aspect of the natural world has an intrinsic value, is connected in such multifarious ways in space and time that we still do not really understand. If we approach nature with that sense of awe, humility, curiosity, we will then more or less automatically engage with it in the manner in which it needs to be engaged, which is respect, humility, and trying to learn from nature. Not have this thing saying the arrogance, oh, I'm educated, I have technology, I have bulldozers, I have nuclear bombs, I can build dams, you know, all of which have their values. But if it is not framed properly, if it is an attempt at dominating nature, if it's an attempt at conquering nature, nature will always have the last laugh. And we've seen enough and more of it in our short lifetimes. And if you go back in history, there's much, much more. How have civilizations collapsed? We know how that the environmental underpinnings of life got unhinged. And that's how major flourishing civilizations have collapsed in history. So I think the well-being connection to environment, to conservation, to sustainable development is out there, has been there for decades, if not centuries. It's for us to really learn the lessons, because as time passes by, if we continue to go on this untrammeled path of destruction, the cost of repairing it is only going to get higher, 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 not just in economic terms, but in human suffering and human lives.
So how can our listeners, Ravi, who are the average citizens, not doing any research, not working with the government, how can they help advance the mission?
In fact, this mission is not about experts. This mission is really about people of India, citizens of India from all walks of life, especially the youth, who form the vast majority of our current population. Simply because, as I said, going back to oft-repeated example of mine, clean air, clean water. Who doesn't need clean air, clean water? And if we relate environment, nature, and what this mission is trying to do to those kind of things, and then add on the wonders of nature, be it a plant, be it a bird, be it a mammal, a reptile, an amphibian, an insect, you know, you bring in so much more. And I am still to really come across a child who is not enamored by a colorful butterfly or a flower. Or we just need to change our attitude. We look at anything remotely wild as dangerous rather than look at it for what it has to offer and the sense of wonder with which we need to be really engaging with it. And the lessons you can learn, I mean, not as ecologists, but as human beings. So they can contribute by, in real terms, by citizen science. One of the biggest programs of the mission is on outreach, capacity building, citizen science. So that's one avenue for it. Capacity building will address thousands of people in various ways, starting from school level, going on to professional levels. The outreach is focused, of course, on journalists, media professionals, but also to corporate executives. I mean, we want biodiversity to become core to the lives of Indians. So it doesn't matter whether you are a professional ecologist or a conservationist. In fact, we would rather focus more on non-professionals because the momentum is going to only build when there is a swell from the citizenry as a whole.
Yeah, I think it's so true that you said, you know, most children are innately ecologists of sorts, and then somewhere along the way we lose that. So how would you say you would want to bring about this interest back in the public? What is the short-term and the long-term plan for the mission?
Right now, the mission is in its final stages of being approved through the formal government channels. It is being pitched as two phases of 5 years each, so it's a 10-year endeavor. The initial investment that's being planned in the first 5 years is slightly lower. It's about 400 crores a year. And as it moves into the 6th to the 10th year, it goes up significantly by two or three times. So it's about 1,200 crores a year. So we are relatively looking to start slowly, to lay the foundations, to identify institutions, to identify individuals, network, build capacity, bring a commonality of vision, make sure that we start off on a strong foundation. Already the Biodiversity Collaborative has had support from the Principal Scientific Advisor's Office for the preparatory phase project. We've done some consultations. We are reaching out. We're conducting public webinars and so on. We are developing roadmaps, all of which, because of the pandemic, we've not been able to do face-to-face or field test. As travel and field work becomes possible, that will be the first way of moving forward. And so the short term is to build the foundation, and the short term is really the next 3 to 4 years. And the longer term is then to build on that foundation, to make the big grants, to make things happen on the ground. And this mission is also unique in that 50% of the budget by design is meant for grants. So we don't know who's going to get that money, so that we identify the right kind of people. It'll be a public call for grants. So initial 5 years, also the grant budgets are relatively smaller. From year 6 onwards, we are talking of hundreds of crores in investment in grant making. And this is across all the programs of the mission. I mean, you're talking of programs that address biodiversity in agriculture, biodiversity in climate change mitigation, biodiversity ecosystem services, biodiversity One Health and zoonosis, medicinal plants, bioeconomy. I've already spoken about outreach. And the first and probably central part of the mission is called Nisarg Bharat, which has 3 sub-programs. One is about exploration and discovery. Believe it or not, India is very, very rich in biodiversity. We know many, many species, but we still believe at least 30% of our biodiversity is still to be documented by science. There are certain areas geographically, there are certain taxa, all of which requires a lot more attention from our side. Then there is a big push by the National Biodiversity Authority to convert the people's biodiversity registers into electronic format. And then we have the third sub-program called Cataloging and Mapping Life of India, which is bringing together all the data, making it available publicly on a map interface so that anybody with an internet connection, a smartphone, a laptop, is able to access that information and contribute to that information.
Thank you so much, Ravi, for taking the time today and sharing some light on the mission. The more I learn about the mission, the more excited I get about it, and I can't wait to see it being implemented. It's clearly the need of the hour in our country and many countries across the world. I'm immensely humbled that you took the time out of your busy schedule to speak with me today. Thank you.
Thank you. Enjoyed it.
Stay tuned to our channel for more insights into the environment and the problems we face globally. Do subscribe to our channel to stay connected.